Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're diving into something pretty transformative today. Generative AI.
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah, you probably heard the buzz, right? But we're going to cut through that and get to the core of it.
Awesome.
Generative AI. It's not just about AI analyzing stuff that's already out there. It's about AI actually creating things, new things,
Right.
like text that's never been written before,
Mm.
images no one's ever seen, audio that's totally original. Even 3D models, like conjured up from code.
Yeah, the potential is mind-blowing. It's such a huge leap from those old expert systems we used to have, those rule-based
Kind of, yeah,
thing.
like those decision trees, right?
Yeah.
Super complicated, but very limited.
Exactly. They could only do what they were specifically programmed to do. But generative AI, this is totally different.
So it learns, right? It figures out patterns from tons of data. But then, and this is the cool part, it uses that knowledge to create something new.
Yeah, and that's the key. It's not just regurgitating what it's seen, it's synthesizing new ideas, new outputs. It's wild.
And the past, like, 2 years have been crazy for this, right? We've seen models like ChatGPT and Stable Diffusion just appear out of nowhere, it seems like, and they're already changing so many fields.
I know, it's been an absolute explosion of innovation, and the impact is so widespread, it's hard to even grasp it all.
We're talking about revolutions in, well, everything, really.
Yeah.
Art, education, how we write software, even scientific discovery could be totally transformed.
It's true. It's genuinely hard to overstate the potential impact on both industry and society.
So for this deep dive, we've got this incredible resource, like a cutting-edge review that maps out this whole landscape.
I'm excited to get into it.
Me too. And our goal is to give you like a clear overview of the main types of generative AI and how they're being used in different sectors.
And I think what's important is we're going to focus on what these models can do, right? The kind of stuff they can generate, rather than getting too deep into the technical weeds.
Right. We don't need to get bogged down in the nitty-gritty of how they actually work. There are other resources out there for that.
Exactly. We're more interested in the applications, the possibilities.
So think of us as your guides through this exciting new world. And the cool thing is, this review, it actually categorizes all these different generative AI models.
Oh, that's handy.
Yeah, and get this, it's based on what kind of stuff you feed into the model, the input, and what comes out of it, the output, all in terms of multimedia formats.
So, like text, images, audio, that kind of thing.
Exactly. And there are 9 distinct categories, which just shows you how much innovation is going on.
Wow, nine. That's a lot. It really highlights the breadth of what's happening.
It does. And one thing that really jumped out at me from the review is that even though there are all these different models, it's really just a few big organizations that are actually using and deploying them.
Oh, interesting. Why is that?
Well, figure 3 in the review shows this really clearly. It takes a huge amount of computational power to train and run these models. And you need some serious expertise.
Right, it's not something just anyone can set up in their basement.
Definitely not. So you see the names of the major tech companies popping up again and again. And the other thing that struck me looking at figure 2 is how new all this is.
Yeah, it feels like it's all happened so fast.
I know, right? Almost all the models we're going to talk about were released just in 2022, with a couple from 2021 and 2023. It's moving at an incredible pace.
That's the world of tech for you, always evolving.
It is. But there's this key point that the review makes, and I think it's super important. These AI tools, they're not about replacing humans, they're about enhancing what we can do.
That's a crucial distinction.
It is. It's about augmentation, collaboration. Like, imagine an artist using these tools to get inspired, or a professor using them to improve their teaching materials. It's all about how we can work with these technologies, you
That's
know?
a much more optimistic way to look at it, definitely.
Exactly. So we've got 9 categories to explore. Where should we start?
Well, I'm a visual person, so maybe something we can actually see.
Perfect. Let's dive into text-to-image models. This is where you give the AI some text, a prompt, and it creates an image, like a piece of art, based on what you wrote.
That's so cool.
It is. And the first one up is DLL-E2 from OpenAI. This thing is amazing at combining concepts, styles, all sorts of stuff, and you can even use it as a developer through their API.
Oh, wow. So it's actually accessible.
Yep. And what makes DLA2 so good, part of it is this neural network they use called CCLP.
CLEP.
Yeah. Think of it like it gives the AI this understanding of like what things look like and the words we use to describe them. It was trained on a massive data set of images and text, so it learned how to match them together.
So it gets this deep connection between language and visuals. That's pretty
It
impressive.
is. And that's what lets DLE2 take your text
Yeah.
and turn it into these coherent, often really realistic images.
Do you have an example?
Yeah, figure four in our source has a great one. The prompt was a Shiba Inu wearing a beret and black turtleneck. The result is, like, both creative and believable.
I've got to see this.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on, we've got Imagen from Google.
Another text-to-image model.
Yep. And this one uses this technique called diffusion. But the interesting thing here is what the researchers discovered about making it better.
Okay, what's that?
They found that making the part of the model that understands language bigger, the part that actually reads your text, was more important for getting good images than just making the image-generating part bigger.
Huh. So it's not just about throwing more computing power at it.
Right. Having a really strong understanding of the meaning of the words is crucial.
That makes sense if it needs to translate those words into visuals.
Exactly. So Imagen, it relies on these pre-trained text encoders like BERT, which basically turn your text into numbers that the model can work with. And then it uses these diffusion models to, like, build the image up in stages, adding more and more detail.
Clever.
It is. Google even made this special data set, Drawbench, to test how well these models work.
So they're serious about benchmarking.
Oh, yeah. Figures 5 and 6 in the review show some of what Imagen can do, like this one. A Pute Corgi lives in a house made out of sushi.
Okay, that's adorable.
Right. And we can't forget Stable Diffusion.
I've heard of that one.
It's pretty famous. It was developed by researchers at LMU Munich. And what's cool about this one is it's open source, so anyone can use the code.
That's a big deal in the AI world.
Definitely. And Stable Diffusion, it uses what's called a latent diffusion model. So it works in this latent space, which is like a compressed, simplified representation of the image data. That makes it a lot faster than older diffusion models that had to work with every single pixel.
So it's more efficient.
Way more efficient. Okay. And it also opens up some cool possibilities for modifying images. And like DLE2, it's got an API so developers can use it.
So much potential there.
Tons. Figure 7 shows an example of what Stable Diffusion can do. And lastly, in the text-to-image category, we've got Muse.
Muse, okay. What's special about that one?
Well, it takes a bit of a different approach. It's a text-to-image transformer. And its creators say it's even more efficient than diffusion models or autoregressive models.
Even more efficient? How do they do that?
They use this technique called masked modeling. It's like a fill-in-the-blanks for images. They hide parts of an image and train Muse to predict what should be there based on what it sees around it and the text prompt.
Ah, so it's learning by, like, solving these little puzzles.
Yeah, exactly. And because of that, it can learn super fast and generate images quickly. It doesn't need as many steps. Plus, it can do a lot of the calculations in parallel, which makes it even faster.
Parallel processing, that's always a good thing for speed.
Oh, yeah. The review says it's significantly faster than models like Imagen 3B and even Stable Diffusion V1.4.
Wow, that's impressive.
Right. And it still works in that latent space like Stable Diffusion. Figure 7 actually has a comparison of images made by DALL-E 2, Imagen, and Muse side by side. It's pretty interesting to see them all together.
Okay, so lots of different approaches to text to image, but all with amazing results.
Yeah, and it's all happening so quickly. It's really mind-blowing.
Now, I'm curious, what about those of us who want to go beyond flat images? What about 3D?
That's a great question. We're moving into the world of text to 3D models now. And the first one up is DreamFusion from Google Research. What's cool about this is that instead of using CLIP, like DLE2 does, it uses a pre-trained 2D text-to-image diffusion model to help it create the 3D model.
So it's using something it already knows how to do in 2D to help it figure out 3D.
Exactly. And the tricky thing with 3D models is making sure they look right from every angle, you know? You don't want it to look weird when you rotate it.
Right, it needs to be consistent.
Yeah. So DreamFusion uses this thing called a differentiable generator. Basically, instead of working directly with pixels in 2D, it focuses on creating these 3D representations that, when you render them into 2D images from different viewpoints, they match the text prompt.
Ah, so it's thinking about the 3D object in terms of how it would look as 2D images from different angles?
Exactly. Figure 8 shows an example. It's a 3D squirrel, and you can see how they modified it with prompts like wearing a jacket.
A squirrel with a jacket. That's adorable.
Right. And the review even suggests watching the animated version online to see it in full 3D.
Okay. I'm definitely checking that out later. What's next?
Well, we've got Magic 3D from NVIDIA. Now, DreamFusion, it's great, but it can take a while to process, and sometimes the image quality isn't perfect from every angle.
So Magic 3D is trying to improve on that.
Yeah, they're tackling those limitations.
Yeah.
They do it with this two-stage optimization process.
Okay, two stages.
First, it creates a low-resolution 3D model using a diffusion prior, kind of like a rough draft.
I see.
And then it refines that draft using this sparse 3D hash grid. It's a more efficient way to model things in detail.
They're speeding things up and getting better quality too.
Exactly. And it works. People who've seen the results, they actually prefer the 3D models from Magic 3D over Dream Fusion. Figure 9 really shows the difference, the geometry, the texture. It's labeled as ours in the comparison.
Okay, so we've gone from text to images, text to 3D objects. What about going the other way, like starting with an image and getting text?
Ah, you're talking about image to text models.
Yeah.
Turning the whole thing around.
Okay.
And this is where we have things like Flamingo, developed by DeepMind.
Flamingo, catchy name.
Right. And this one, it's a visual language model, and it uses something called few-shot learning.
Few-shot learning? What's that?
It's like, you know how sometimes you only need to see something a couple of times to understand it? That's few-shot learning. Flamingo can learn to do all sorts of tasks related to images and language just from a handful of examples.
So it's a quick learner.
Very quick. It can even handle text and images together, or even videos, and then generate text based on what it sees.
Wow. So it's really connecting those two worlds, visuals and language.
It is. And it does this by using like two different AI parts, a vision model to understand the image and a large language model to figure out what to say about it.
Makes sense. They each have their own strengths.
Exactly. Figure 10 has some examples that give Flamingo an image and some text, a prompt, and it generates these really insightful responses. It's good at understanding the context.
Impressive. What else is there for image to text?
Well, we have Visual GPT from OpenAI. This one's cool because it builds on their existing language model, GPT-2.
Oh, so they're reusing something they already have.
Yeah, they're repurposing it for a new task. Clever, right?
Definitely. But how does it bridge that gap going from images to text?
Visual GPT uses this new encoder-decoder attention mechanism. It's specifically designed to connect the stuff it sees in the image with the language processing power of GPT-2.
So it's creating a link between the visual features and the language generation.
Yep. And the cool thing is, it doesn't need as much training data as some other image-to-text models. That's a big plus.
Always good to be efficient.
Absolutely. And if you're a developer, you can actually access the API for Visual GPT on GitHub. Figure 11 has some examples. It shows the input images and the text that Visual GPT comes up with. And you can actually see these attention scores, which highlight the words that are most connected to different parts of the image.
Oh, like a heat map of the words.
Yeah, kind of. You can see how the words cat and television light up when those things are in the image.
That's really cool. Okay, so we've done images. Now what about video?
You're reading my mind. Moving beyond still images, we're entering the world of text to video models. This is where the AI takes your text and creates a whole sequence of video frames, basically generating a movie.
Wow, that's next level.
It is. And one of the leaders here is Finaki, again from Google Research. What's amazing about this one is it can create realistic videos from text prompts that actually change over time. It can tell a story.
So it can handle narratives. That sounds incredibly complex.
It is. Yeah. And part of how they achieve this is by training it on both huge data sets of image text pairs and smaller data sets of video text pairs. So it learns from both. You know?
It's getting a broader understanding that way.
Yep. The model has three main parts: an encoder to understand the video, a transformer to deal with the text prompts, and then the video generator itself.
Okay, so it's team effort.
Definitely. And even though it might be trained on shorter video clips, it can actually create much longer videos that are still consistent and make sense over time. Figures 12 and 13 show some examples. You can see video frames generated from text sequences, and also how they combine images with text prompts to guide how the video unfolds.
That's just incredible. What about audio with video? Is there anything for that?
Good point. Our review talks about Soundify from Runway. It's not strictly text to video, but it's super interesting and related. It tackles the problem of adding sound effects to video.
Oh, right. That's a whole other challenge in video editing.
Yeah, finding the right sounds, making sure they sync up perfectly, getting the levels right. It can take forever.
I can imagine. So Soundify is trying to automate that.
Exactly. It's like an AI assistant for sound design. It has three main parts: classification, where it uses things like CLIP to figure out what objects or actions are in the video that might make sounds, synchronization, to pinpoint when those sounds should happen, and then mix, to seamlessly blend those sounds together.
So it takes care of the whole sound design process.
Pretty much. It could be a huge time saver for video editors and potentially make the audio quality even better.
That's awesome. Okay, shifting gears a bit, what about just audio on its own? Text to audio, generating sounds from words?
That's where things get really interesting. We have models like AudioLM, from Google. This one's all about making high-quality audio that's consistent over time. It does this by turning audio into these little chunks, tokens, and then using language modeling to create new sequences of those tokens.
So it's kind of treating audio like text in a way.
Yeah, in a sense. Mm. And by training on tons of audio data, it learns all these patterns and structures in sound. So it can take a short audio prompt and continue it in a way that sounds natural.
That's pretty mind-blowing.
It is. And get this, it can actually generate piano music that follows musical rules, even though it wasn't trained on sheet music or anything like that.
So it's figuring out the underlying structure of music on its own.
Seems like it. And they've done tests where people can barely tell the difference between AudioLM's synthetic speech and real human speech.
That's wild. It's getting so realistic.
It really is. Okay, next up in the audio world is Jukebox from OpenAI. This one's all about making music with singing directly from the raw audio.
Directly from the raw audio. So it's not working with those symbolic representations like MIDI or piano rolls.
Nope. This is straight from the audio waveforms. And that's a lot harder to do because audio is so complex.
Yeah, it's a lot of data to process.
It is. So Jukebox, it uses this thing called a hierarchical VQVAE to kind of compress the audio down into a manageable space while still keeping most of the important information.
Okay, so it's finding a way to simplify it without losing too much.
Exactly. They trained it on over a million songs from LyricWiki, and it can actually generate music in different genres, like rock, hip-hop, jazz. Right now, it's mainly focused on English lyrics, though.
Still, that's pretty impressive.
It is. The model itself is huge, around 5 billion parameters, and like many of these, it's got an API available on GitHub.
So many resources for developers out there. Now, what about going in the opposite direction with audio, from sound to text, like transcription?
Great point. That's where we have Whisper, also from OpenAI. But instead of generating audio, it transcribes it, turns audio into text.
Okay, so a speech recognition model.
Exactly. And they've designed it to be super robust, so it can handle lots of different languages, accents, background noise, all sorts of stuff. They didn't want it to need a lot of fine tuning for each situation.
So it's meant to be adaptable and work right out of the box.
Yep. And to train it, they used a massive data set, 680,000 hours of audio from all over the internet.
Wow, that's a lot of listening.
It is. And the model itself is an encoder-decoder transformer. It processes the audio in 30-second chunks and matches those up with their transcripts in the training data. And you guessed it, it's got an API on GitHub.
They're really good about making these tools accessible. All right, we've covered a lot of ground with the non-textual stuff. What about models that work with text as both input and output, like those conversational AI things?
That's where we get into the world of chatbots, question answering systems, text summarization, all sorts of things. And probably the most famous one right now is ChatGPT from OpenAI. It's that conversational model everyone's talking about.
ChatGPT, I've definitely heard of that one. It seems like it can do almost anything.
It's pretty versatile. It can have conversations, answer your questions, even push back if you say something that's wrong, and it can refuse to do things that are inappropriate.
Sounds like they've put a lot of work into making it safe and reliable.
Definitely. Our review mentions it's based on a transformer architecture, but what really sets it apart is the way it's trained. They use this method called reinforcement learning for human feedback.
Reinforcement learning for human feedback. That's a mouthful.
It is. So basically, there are a few stages to the training. First, they fine-tune a basic model using supervised learning. That means human AI trainers have these conversations, pretending to be both the user and the AI, to show the model what good dialogue looks like.
So they're giving it examples to learn from.
Yep. And then those same trainers, they give feedback on the model's responses, saying which ones are good and which ones aren't so great.
So they're guiding its learning.
Exactly. And they combine that data set of conversations and feedback with data from another model, InstructGPT, which is also designed to give helpful and truthful responses.
So they're using multiple sources of data to train it.
Yeah. And then finally, they use these reinforcement learning techniques to make the model even better, based on what those human trainers preferred. So they're basically training the AI to be as helpful and engaging as possible.
Clever. It's like they're teaching it to be a good conversational partner.
Exactly. Figure 14 in the review has a nice visual summary of all those training steps. Oh, and did I mention ChatGPT can also generate code and do some basic math?
Yeah, it seems like it can do a little bit of everything.
It's pretty versatile. And they've got demos and the API available on OpenAI's website.
Cool. Now, what about Google's offering in this area?
You're talking about LaMDA. That's Google's big language model for dialogue. And the key difference here is that they trained it specifically on a massive amount of dialogue data.
So it's been fine-tuned for conversation from the ground up.
Exactly. It's actually a whole family of language models, all based on the Transformer architecture. And some of them are enormous, like 137 billion parameters trained on over a trillion words of text.
That's mind-boggling.
It is. And what's interesting is they only needed to use a tiny fraction of that data for fine-tuning to make sure the model was safe and accurate.
So the initial training did a lot of the heavy lifting.
Yeah, it seems like it. LaMDA is really good at understanding those long-range dependencies in text, which is super important for having natural-sounding conversations.
It needs to keep track of the whole conversation, not just the last few words.
Right. And it can actually do multiple things at once, like generate different responses, filter them to make sure they're appropriate, connect them to relevant information, and then pick the best one to give you.
So it's like a whole team of AIs working together.
It's pretty impressive. Figure 15 shows an example of conversation with LaMDA.
Okay, next up we have Pierre from Meta AI Research.
Pierre, okay, what's that one all about?
This one's really interesting. It's all about collaboration, and they trained it using the edit history of Wikipedia articles.
Wait, so it's learning from how people edit Wikipedia?
Yep. It's trying to understand the whole writing process, which they break down into these four stages: plan, edit, explain, and repeat.
So it's like an iterative process where it keeps refining the text.
Exactly. And it can even involve humans in that loop, giving feedback and making changes.
So it's a true collaboration. It is. It uses this self-training approach where models fill in missing information, and then those filled-in parts are used to train other models. One of the challenges they had was dealing with all the comments and stuff in the Wikipedia edit history, which could be messy and sometimes unhelpful.
Yeah, not all edits are created equal.
Right. So they added this retrieval system to help ground the generated text in more reliable information. And Pierre, it's built on this DeepSpeed optimized transformer architecture.
Always good to have those optimizations for speed.
Definitely. Okay, now for something truly groundbreaking. Meta AI speech from brain.
Speech from brain? What's that?
This project is all about helping people who can't communicate through speech or gestures. It tries to decode language directly from brain recordings.
Whoa, that's straight out of science
I
fiction.
know, right? And it's not like those older methods that needed surgery to implant electrodes. This is all non-invasive, using EEG and MEG scans.
So they're reading brainwaves from outside the skull.
Yep. But it's super challenging because brain recordings are noisy.
Yep.
Everyone's brain is a bit different.
Yeah, that makes sense. So how does it actually work?
They use this technique called contrastive learning to figure out the connections between brain recordings and the sounds of spoken language. And they use this model called Wave2Vec 2.0 to process the audio.
Okay, so they're training it to match up the brain activity with the corresponding sounds.
Exactly. They use a big data set, 150 hours of recordings from people listening to audiobooks.
No.
And the part of the model that deals with the brain signals, it uses a deep convolutional neural network.
Wow, that's a lot of complexity.
It is, and the results are promising. The more EEG and MEG data they use, the better the decoding gets. Right now, they're focused on understanding speech that someone is hearing, but the ultimate goal is to decode what someone is thinking to say, even if they can't speak it.
That would be life-changing for so many people.
Absolutely. Okay, let's shift gears again. We're moving into text-to-code models now.
Code generation. This is a big one for software developers.
It is. And first up is Codex from OpenAI. This AI system is all about taking natural language, like what we're speaking now, and turning it into computer code.
So you could basically tell it what you want your program to do, and it would write the code for you.
Pretty much. And it's good at a lot of different programming tasks. It's especially good at figuring out how to use existing code libraries, APIs, all those building blocks that programmers rely on.
Makes sense. A lot of programming is about using what's already out there effectively.
Exactly. So where did Codex learn all this? Well, they trained it on a massive amount of code from public GitHub repositories, like 179 gigabytes of Python code.
Wow, they really threw a lot of data at it.
They did. And then they fine-tuned it starting from GPT-3, which already has great language understanding. If you're curious, you can find demos and the API for Codex on OpenAI's website.
Nice. Now, what about DeepMind's contribution to code generation?
Ah, you're talking about AlphaCode. This one's also about generating code, but it's designed to solve more complex problems, the kind that require more reasoning and might be totally new.
So it's going beyond just translating simple instructions into code.
Yeah, it's about tackling those tougher challenges. And they achieve this with a few key things: a huge and varied data set for training, powerful transformer architectures, and using large-scale sampling when generating the code.
Okay, so they're using some advanced techniques there.
Definitely. They pre-trained AlphaCode on an even bigger GitHub dataset than Codex, over 700 gigabytes of code. And they fine-tuned it specifically on CodeForces, which is a platform for competitive programming.
So they're training it on problems that are designed to be really hard.
Yep. And the model itself uses an encoder-decoder transformer, which has some advantages. And they use techniques like multi-query attention to make the sampling process more efficient.
So it's both powerful and efficient.
Exactly. Okay, now let's move into a newer but super promising area, text-to-science models. This is all about automating the creation of scientific text.
Wow, so AI writing scientific papers.
It's getting there. And one of the pioneers in this field is Galactica, a collaboration between Meta AI and Papers with Code. The goal here is to organize and summarize all that vast scientific knowledge out there.
That's a huge task. There's so much research being published all the time.
I know, right? And one cool thing about Galactica is that you can train it for a long time, multiple epochs, without it getting worse. It actually keeps getting better.
That's unusual. Most models start to overfit after a while, right?
Yeah, but not this one. And another key thing is that it uses this standard markdown format for all the scientific data it works with. That makes it easier to combine information from different sources.
So it's creating this unified representation of scientific knowledge.
Exactly. And it can even predict citations, which is pretty impressive. The bigger the model, the better it gets at that.
So it's understanding the relationships between different papers and research?
It is. And it can even handle multimodal stuff like chemical formulas and protein sequences. It uses a decoder-only transformer architecture at its core.
Sounds like a powerful tool for researchers.
Definitely. Okay, one more in the text-to-science category, Minerva.
Minerva. Okay. What sets this one apart?
This one is all about answering math and science questions, and not just giving you the answer, but actually showing you the steps, the reasoning behind it.
Ah, so it's like having a tutor that can explain things step by step.
Exactly. They trained it on a very specific data set focused on this kind of problem solving. And what's cool is it can generate solutions with both numbers and symbolic math without needing a calculator or anything.
So it's really understanding the concepts, not just crunching numbers.
It is. It's a big step towards making AI more transparent and understandable, yeah. Especially in scientific fields.
I like that. Now, I'm curious,